and Chris, and this is my Writing Table podcast, where we talk to authors and other creatives about the writing world and what it takes to create the books that we love to read. Ready? Pull up a chair and let's begin. Padisaw Akbari is a mental health therapist and writer from Seattle, Washington. Her debut YA novel, Just Another Epic Love Poem, follows two queer best friends in Catholic school as they fall in love through the pages of a never-ending poem they've been writing back and forth for 5 years. When not writing or therapizing, Padisaw can be found trying to replicate her grandmother's drool-worthy Persian recipes, riding ferries around Puget Sound, and dancing around the kitchen with her wife and dogs. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I was reading all about you. I'm curious, mental health therapist and writer, which came first?
Oh boy. In terms of employment, definitely a therapist, but in terms of something that I've been doing my whole life, writing's been around since I was a kid. And yeah, so I guess the two kind of have woven into my life in different ways.
So I have a theory that those who haven't begun writing yet, but you're just waiting for the right time.
I was definitely that kid who would be writing their own stories, you know, under the desk while they were supposed to be doing something else in class and sharing stories with friends and with parents, and kind of always had my hand in writing in some way until after I got my therapy degree and started practicing. And I found that there was a way to access creativity through therapy and through, you know, some of the ways that you have to be imaginative with your clients and practice empathy and practice kind of taking other people's perspective. But I missed the creativity of only getting to explore what was in my own mind and create my own characters and imagine their own experiences just sort of in my own little world. So I missed that.
Your debut novel is set against a backdrop of a Catholic school. And I understand that you attended Catholic school as well. You said that you would write stories, but did you imagine that your stories would be set in a Catholic school?
No, I actually remember when I took a writing class in college, one of our assignments was to write a list of titles of essays or stories that we would never want to write. So you're thinking about what are the things I never want to think about and talk about. And one of my essay titles of things I never wanted to write was all about Catholic school. And another one was all about what it's like to be 17. Because at the time I thought, I never want to go back to those experiences.
I do now not you're writing YA. Them.
And I remember the writing teacher telling us to look at those titles and think about why it is that we don't want to talk about them or we don't want to explore them. And oftentimes there's some really interesting stuff there. And yeah, so I surprised myself, but maybe I didn't surprise that writing teacher.
You brought up something funny about your writing teacher saying, well, you need to look at those titles and why you don't want to write those stories. And the things that I don't want to write about, if I really think about it, are the ones that I need most to write about.
Yeah.
The story needs it, but there's something in me that wants to go around it. And there's really no way to go around those things. Do you find that to be true?
Absolutely. I think in writing and in therapy, we tend to resist the things that are kind of going toward a painful emotional truth about ourselves. We don't want to touch the things that are difficult or confusing or maybe still a bit wounded. And so when I was in my early 20s and in that writing class, I didn't want to look at the stuff that was hard and that was so challenging for me to get through because it had just been a few years since I had made it out of Catholic school and made it out of my teens. But now I think I see that it's an act of healing. What's that quote? Like, take your broken heart and make it into art.
That, oh, wow.
When you turn towards that, you're not only creating art that might resonate with other people, but you're also finding a way forward and healing through some of the things that you've experienced.
Your debut novel is Just Another Epic Love Poem. And Booklist, not only did they give it a starred review, they said, in Akbari's powerful debut, poetry gives life to the text through the verses of Mitra and B, as well as the renowned poets they read. This is laugh out loud, funny, poignant, realistic, and heartbreaking in the best way. What a great review by Booklist. What a way to come into your writing career. Tell us about this story.
So the story starts with two main characters, Mitra and Bee. Mitra has just transferred into a Catholic school at age 13 after being in a secular, you know, public school. And she has no framework for understanding what that's going to be like. And she meets Bee and they form this friendship over feeling like outsiders within the larger community of their school. And they also form a friendship around poetry and around writing. And they start writing this never-ending poem back and forth between the two of them at age 13. And the novel really begins as they are entering the winter term of their senior year of high school. They're getting ready to graduate. They're thinking about college. They've been writing this epic poem together for 5 years. And Mitra is kind of at a boiling point of trying to acknowledge that she's fallen in love with Bee and that she doesn't want to be in love with Bee because she wants to preserve their friendship and she's afraid of taking any risks. And so the novel follows what happens as the two of them confront their feelings for each other, what happens as Mitra also tries to reconcile her relationship with her mother who's been absent and who returns to her life. And how do their lives transform and how does the poem transform with it?
Incredibly unique idea, beautiful framework for the story. With that framework, was this how you originally planned it?
The idea started with having a never-ending poem that the two girls would write, but I played around a lot with how that would show up. You know, at one point I thought about having one page of the text be prose and then the opposite page be the poem, or to have the prose in the main body of the text and maybe the poem running like a through line at the top of the page. But from the beginning, it was going to be just prose chapters with these interstitial segments of their never-ending poem. And as I started writing, I realized that I was kind of constraining myself with that framework. And if I'm already breaking out of a traditional novel format by having the never-ending poem, I thought, why not try to also break out of the way that the prose chapters work? So instead of just having chapters of prose there, you get text message threads and you get handwritten notes in class and you get poems that Mitra writes to herself or for her school assignments and you get her teacher's comments back on her assignments and you get found documents and all these different things. So the story unfolds in written language in all its forms, but poetry being the heart throughout it.
So it's put together like real life and when you're in high school.
Yeah.
I think that's wonderful. How did you pitch it?
I think that originally the focus was going to be on these two girls writing a never-ending epic love poem together. And without giving too many spoilers, I'll say that originally the story was going to be about a lot of heartache and what happens when people love each other and break up and what happens when you have a relationship transform through all these different phases of friendship and romance and heartbreak. What does that look like? How does the poetry hold space for all of that? And ultimately, I'll try to keep spoilers out, but I'll say that the pitch really shifted through conversations with the editors that I worked with, that maybe a sense of hopefulness and optimism would be really needed right now. And maybe we can explore all of those themes that I talked about through the poetry while still having romance at the heart of the story and having the kind of central theme be about connection. And so I think that's the piece that shifted. So the pitch of having a never-ending poem stayed the same, but some of the central questions around vulnerability and connection maybe got answered in a more optimistic way.
In an article you wrote for Zibby magazine, we love Zibby here.
Yeah.
I've been on her show. She's been on mine. I just think the world of her. You spoke about your grandmother, Bibi Jean. I want to read what you said about her because her description was just exquisite. In her 10th decade of life, at 5 feet tall, with tight black curls and coal-lined eyes, as flirtatious as ever, Bibi Jean still laughs like a crow and is often at the center of the social scene in her senior living community. She is a belly dancer, a seamstress, a woman who pierced her own nose with a needle in her 70s. We say use imagery, show, don't tell. I mean, you have shown us in two sentences? Who this woman is. And I just want to say, wow, that is so cool. You also mentioned through her, you've learned that poetry is a family legacy and you say it's in your blood. Tell us what you meant by that.
Oh boy, Bibi Jean is a character. And I think she's really vibrant. And I'm glad that I could capture that, that you could get that sense from her. She's somebody that when you know her, she can't be an acquaintance. She's automatically kind of arrives fully formed into your life. And I spent one summer when I was 10 years old with her at home with me, kind of babysitting, but I was old enough at the point to not be babysat. And so she decided she was going to teach me a lot of things and it would be more like a apprenticeship summer. And she taught me, she taught me some of our family recipes. And then she also would teach me things like how poetry was connected to our culture. So one of the big historical poets in Iranian culture is Hafez from centuries ago. And his poetry is used as a tool for divination, kind of like in the way that some folks in Western culture will use astrology or tarot to ask questions and get answers about their lives. Mm-hmm. People in Persian culture will open Hafez's book and ask a question and come up with an answer based on some of the verses that he's written. But it's not an easy answer. It's something that you have to work to understand. And that's something that I learned with Bibi Jean's help. It's also something that I write about in just another epic love poem that Mitra has to figure out how to divine her own answers from the text without having the support. So that was one way that my grandmother taught me to connect with poetry. But the other was that she would tell me stories about my great-great-grandfather, Esla, and his role through poetry in some resistance to British imperialism that was happening in Iran. This was, I think, in around 1915. And this was when the British had arrived and was going to occupy the port town in Iran called Bushehr. And that's where my great-great-grandfather lived. And the locals were trying to kind of scrabble together to come up with a way to resist the occupation. And the tool that my ancestor used was to write poetry that was critical of what was happening. And he would write it in pamphlets and distribute it around town. And he would create signs and post them through the neighborhood, basically trying to rally people together, but using the language of the people and the language of the historical figures like Hafez and Rumi and Omar Khayyam. He used poetry because that's what people would resonate with. And that was seen as so revolutionary that the family history goes that he was threatened with the murder of his sons. Basically, they said, if you stay in this town, we'll kill your family. And so he was exiled to India and he took his family and left. And that, you can imagine, had some ripple effects throughout time on our family's history and also kind of a fusion of cultures that happened there. Mm-hmm. But the message that I got from Bibi Jean was that what he had to say through poetry was so powerful that it risked his life and his children's lives. And I grew up knowing that that was part of our legacy and that words can be powerful.
Has she read your novel?
Not yet. I would like to share it with her. She's an avid reader, but I don't know if young adult queer romance will be her thing.
I'll bet you she's going to be proud. Day after day, we're hearing about titles being banned in school libraries, many with LGBTQ+ narratives. As a YA author, what would you say to those responsible?
When I think back to the books that influenced me as a young person, I think especially back to my third grade classroom. When I was in third grade, I finally got reading glasses. Up until then, everybody thought I didn't like to read, but it was just that I had headaches and I didn't know how to articulate that reading was hard for me. And so I entered third grade pretty behind in terms of reading level. And my teacher could tell that I had an appetite for words, but that I kind of was on my own journey with it and was just discovering what reading could do. And he gave me my own reading assignments. He would bring me books that were not even children's books, but memoirs about people like with HIV, or memoirs about people who had lived through experiencing polio. Or he brought me the copy of Walk Two Moons from Sharon Creech. And the kinds of stories that he shared with me, I just devoured. And I started reading across genres and across age groups. I read a lot of Amy Tan in middle school.
Joy Luck Club is amazing.
Yeah. So when I think about the books that changed my life at that point in time, there were often books that would be banned, books about people living with HIV that helped me understand what was happening during the AIDS crisis that I didn't, you know, I wouldn't have had any real framework for understanding that. I started to understand the perspective of people with disabilities through some of the books that he shared with me. I understood more about racism and you know, the stories that I got to read about Japanese imprisonment that happened in my own state. Those kinds of books changed my life and helped me see the world around me in really vivid color and to understand history, but also how that ripples into what happens today. So I would just ask why we would take any steps to narrow the worlds of young people when we have a chance to broaden them and to open them up. Felt a lot of gratitude that the teachers in my life encouraged me to open up my world and increase my understanding of things around me instead of limiting me or trying to tell me that what I was reading was inappropriate for my age.
Have you been able to reach out to any of them about what you've written?
I have a teacher from my Catholic high school who I have stayed connected with, who was a remarkable teacher for me and really encouraged my poetry writing as well. And she actually greatly influenced one of the characters in just another epic love poem. There's a teacher there who was a former nun and is now 80 years old. And Mitra thinks that there's no way they're going to connect. But when she starts class with this teacher, she begins to see that Miss Acosta, the teacher's lens on life and lens on Catholicism, is really about humanity, empathy, kindness, and justice. And that to Mitra is like revolutionary, to see that somebody with a different background, of a different age, of a different generation, has this common set of values to her. And that's how I felt with my teacher. Shout out to Mrs. Johnston.
Yay, Ms.
We are still in touch. Yeah. And she, I remember, printed out one time a poem that I'd written for a school assignment and made like 40 copies of it and handed one out to every student in the class and made me stand up in front of all of them and read it. And then they all read it and talked about it. And she didn't give me any warning that this was going to happen. I just
showed up. Well, if she would have given you a warning, yeah, you wouldn't have shown up that day.
Yeah. And at the time I was like terrified and like, God, I can't believe she's making me do this. But it also made me feel like what I had to say mattered and somebody cared about what I had to say. And as a, you know, Iranian American kid in Catholic school, who's not Catholic, who was queer, but not out to myself or to other people at the time, that was really a rare experience to be told what you have to say is interesting and important and valuable and everybody should know.
Well, and I think it also said, you know, it said so much, but I think it also said, you could do this. Like, this is real. We take you seriously. We take this talent you have seriously. And I think that is so freaking cool. What has writing taught you about yourself?
Oh, boy. I think that I tend to write toward a question that I have. And it's oftentimes a question that I'm grappling with personally. And that's what makes writing interesting for me. If I'm trying to write something and I find that I'm just not invested, it's because there's not some sort of emotionally evocative question at the center of it. And so with my debut novel, the question was around, is it worth risking vulnerability to gain connection? Is it worth trusting someone to gain intimacy or connection when you can also risk being hurt and being rejected and maybe also being hurt in a way that you've been hurt before? And that was a really interesting question for me to wrestle with as a therapist. I often wrestle with that with my clients who feel a lot of, you know, fear or anxiety, understandably, about opening up their shells and being themselves with others at the risk of being judged or shamed. So I've learned that I think these big questions are what keep me invested in the life around me, that it's a quest for meaning, whether it's therapy or writing or the relationships that I have. It's always a question of, what can I find here that's meaningful? And I love that writing lets me explore that.
Do you have time to read right now? And if so, what are you reading?
I have been reading. It's been a really fun reading season for me right now because I wrapped up the novel and I get a little bit of a break. Right now I'm reading Chain Gang All-Stars, which has been phenomenal. It's kind of a dystopian story about the prison industrial complex. I think it's been described as like a almost Hunger Games-y, but from the perspective of racism, slavery, and the prison industrial complex, and in sort of a dystopian future. And to me, it's fascinating and really emotionally evocative. The way that the author imagines where we could be headed with the privatization of prisons is chilling. And it's just a gorgeous read. So I'm hoping that I get to see where these characters are headed. I'm very excited to finish the book. That's what I'm reading from the adult side of things. From the young adult side of things, I just finished the novel Beating Heart Baby. And that was like a beautiful ode to what it's like to be teen artists and musicians and in love, and how do internet friendships influence young people? Because I think that's something that I haven't seen explored very much in literature yet. And I thought that was a beautiful testament to some of the things I've seen be very important to young clients of mine. So that was a gorgeous read as well.
What's next for you?
I'm excited for some events coming up. I'm going to be doing a book launch here in Seattle and then an event also in Eugene, Oregon. And I'm hoping to head to some literary festivals in the spring and then also doing a writing in residence at Hedgebrook here in Washington on Whidbey Island, which I'm really looking forward to.
Oh my gosh. How long are you going to be there?
I think just for 2 weeks, but it's a time.
Yeah, but
where you
2 weeks
to be,
on Whidbey Island. Oh my goodness.
You
I'm
get to
so
be
jealous.
In solitude. Oh, I hope you go at some point. You get to just be in solitude with the writing. I'm really excited by that. And also, I think it's daunting. I never spend that much time alone without any distraction or any responsibilities that are conveniently taking you away from the creative side of things.
I know, but it is. It's a little worrisome. Like, what if I get there and I can't write?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Time to be alone with yourself. Yeah. And I think that'll be a great place for me to start working on some new writing that I'm excited about. So I'm definitely going to be writing more YA. It's all still coming together right now, but I think Hedgebrook is going to give me the opportunity to do that. And I can't wait to embark on the next project.
Do you have any advice for new writers?
I think coming from the perspective of a therapist, I often see that people's self-criticism or self-judgment gets in the way. And if you can find a time of day or a place or a frame of mind in which your self-criticism is the most quiet and write from that place, that can be really helpful. So whether that's like, I'm going to write first thing in the morning because I'm tired and I don't care about making mistakes and my judgment isn't really up and running yet. Or maybe it's, I'm going to write late at night when I feel like everything around me is quiet and dark and there's a stillness and I'm not, you know, maybe bothered by as much voice inside my head saying that I shouldn't be doing this or that I'm not good enough. Or if you need to take a walk or listen to a certain music or any ritual for you that allows you to quiet some of the self-criticism and just get the words down, even if you think they're going to be terrible, let yourself make something terrible and then let yourself keep making it until you can see the shape of the art inside.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's great to chat with a fellow writer about this process.
To learn more, visit parisawrites.com. That's parisawrites.com.
If you're enjoying The Writing Table, please consider leaving us a review. There are so many podcasts out there. Reviews help other listeners find us. Thanks so much for your support.